Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact.
Who knew a few decades ago man could invent a material that lasts forever? And what do we do with it? Do we put it on a pedestal, treat it like gold, value it? No. What we do is we treat it like rubbish. We throw it in the streets, we throw it in the ocean, we throw it in the bin. We use plastic in the wrong way, so that's the fundamental.
My guest today is Sean Sutherland, co-founder of A Plastic Planet. Sean is a serial entrepreneur with a background that spans advertising, Michelin star restaurants, film production, and design agencies. In 2005, she co-created Mamma Mio, the first premium pregnancy skincare range, and in 2014 launched Mio, delivering skin fitness to active women. In 2017, Sean co-founded A Plastic Planet, a social impact nonprofit with a single goal: to ignite and inspire the world to turn off the plastic tap. Sean has won awards including Female Marketer of the Year, Entrepreneur of the Year, and British Inventor of the Year, as well as a Points of Light Award from 10 Downing Street. Sean, welcome.
Thank you.
You founded and run a skincare business in different iterations. What did you learn from that experience that you've translated into your work in A Plastic Planet?
So the skincare business and many businesses within that whole personal care beauty business, when I came into it, really it was through complete selfish need rather than any other desire, because myself and my co-founders then, we created products that we needed to help us through that whole 9 month stretch of pregnancy. So whilst we were creating the products, not only did we want them to absolutely perform, but everything around them, we wanted to be very careful about the use of language, because the beauty industry, less so now, but definitely 15 years ago, is often built on making women particularly feel insecure about how they look and then selling them a product to fix it. So, you know, pointing out a problem perhaps they weren't even aware of, I don't know, enlarged nostrils. And then here's a skin tightening for your nostrils product that you didn't even know you needed. And we wanted to focus on something that was a genuine need, and pregnancy is, of course, probably the biggest skincare need you're ever going to have, because you're going to put 30 inches on your waist in 40 weeks and then hopefully lose it. So tremendous demand for skin elasticity and skin health. But also it's a very vulnerable time for women. So we wanted to create a brand that really nurtured them, that was like this little hug along the journey of pregnancy, looking after them through that very vulnerable, a time where you are not body confident. This little alien has invaded your body and you have no idea. We're used to having control and we have no control in that 9 month period. But it's also a wonderful time. So we wanted to create a range that really celebrated you. So everything within that range, from every word, every product title, it was there to make you feel cared for, appreciated, valued, and really understood.
Let's talk about A Plastic Planet. Tell us what it is and where it came from and why you set it up.
So you can imagine, having set up and ran a skincare brand that was in the final stages before we sold the business in 14 different countries, you can imagine I am no plastic saint. How many unrecycled plastic bottles have I personally been responsible for pumping out into the environment? And shocking to say now, sitting with you, particularly you, it wasn't on my list. You know, what was happening to those bottles, the whole sustainability side of our business was not on my to-do list. We were so focused as a small beauty brand in a highly competitive space. We were so focused on how are we going to open a new market? You know, what's our next product? How do we develop this very strong relationship with our customers? How are we there for them? All of that side was really our focus, rather than what happens to those bottles after our customers have used them. And it was in the latter stages of running that business that I got involved in the launch of the documentary film, A Plastic Ocean. So that for me was my epiphany, my wake up of, jeepers, what have we done? And what do we continue to do every single day at an increasing rate? And it was at one of the screenings that we put on Which was just down the road at the Electric. And you can imagine, November 2016, nobody wants to come to see a documentary about plastic in the ocean. What a downer. So we had to bribe people with dinner. Luckily, we had David Attenborough, bless him, coming along. And it was just as we were getting ready for one of those screenings that myself and my co-founder, Frederica Magnusson, were looking at each other saying, so what is the takeaway from this documentary? People are going to watch this and they're going to feel scared and angry and definitely guilty. And then tomorrow they're going to go shopping and they're going to push their trolley through whatever supermarket and they're going to fill their trolley with plastic packaging because they have no choice. So that really was the birth of us thinking, let's do something in a different way. Let's set up not another NGO, not another charity, but a different kind of pro-business social movement that will accelerate the pace of change and really focus on solutions rather than the problem. And we started with our first campaign, which was born out of that thought of tomorrow you'll go shopping and you have no choice. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we did have choice? Now we know what we know. And so our first campaign that we launched over 2 years ago now, 2.5 years ago, was simply asking supermarkets for a plastic-free aisle. So out of all your 40 aisles, Asda, Sainsbury's, you know, Tesco's, Walmart, everybody, just give us one aisle so that shoppers can push their trolleys down. And if they choose to, they can shop plastic free. Their meat, their fish, their everything plastic free. And so we spent the next year talking to all the supermarket bosses. And halfway through that year, Blue Planet 2 happened. Obviously, that had an enormous impact, particularly in the UK. The big wake up for many people. And people took the meetings because we had extraordinary media attention. But really, there was no intention to change. It was like we were asking for moon dust. And then, fortunately, we met Eric Doze, who owns a supermarket chain in Amsterdam and throughout the Netherlands called Eco Plaza. And Eric said, I love everything about my supermarket, but I hate the plastic. So I would like to be the first to launch the world's first plastic-free aisle. And 4 months later, so February 2018, we launched the world's first plastic-free aisle. And that was a very extraordinary day for us because you can imagine, it's, you know, picture this, you're in West Amsterdam. We're not in London, we're not in New York, Paris. It's West Amsterdam. It's a freezing cold February morning. And we're opening a little tiny corner store, which is a plastic-free aisle with just over 700 product lines. And on that day, I personally did 55 media interviews because it was just like this symbol of hope that the world was really waking up to the plastic crisis at that by that stage. And everybody was coming out with their plastic pacts and their pledges and their promises. And everything was about 2025, 2030. And yet here was a store showing that we can shop plastic free today. So it gave the shopper hope. So what was amazing for me was the fact that we had coverage from, you know, CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times and Chinese TV and Japanese TV. And it really symbolized that we can make change happen today. And it also showed me that these two unreasonable women who understood really how to communicate a massive problem on a very human scale, not by saying, hey, Paul, would you like to reduce your plastic footprint by 20% by the year 2021, that means nothing to anybody. But by saying, hey, would you like to shop in a plastic-free aisle? Now you know what you know, why wouldn't you? So I think that was the one of the reasons that it had so much impact was it was really shown that change could happen now.
I get the fact that a very competent and skilled and visionary marketer, which you clearly are, can spread the word about how desirable it is to have a world and a shopping experience in particular that is plastic-free. I'm interested to hear, when you go from a small Dutch supermarket with a highly committed founder who cares about the environment to Tesco's, what you need to do to persuade them that this is not just desirable, but achievable.
One of the most important things is that we can prove a business case. And obviously Echo Plaza, yes, an extraordinary amount of media attention for them, which I know will directly relate to an uplift in sales. But we did another project that is perhaps more relevant to the Tescos of this world, which was in North London. And in November, we completed a 10-week speedy project where we took over Thornton's Budgens in Belsize Park. Inspirational franchise owner Andrew Thornton said, I'm really keen to create something symbolic here. And as you might know, Budgens are owned by Booker, which is ultimately owned by Tesco. And so we saw this as a real Trojan horse. And we completed a 10-week project where we took 2,000 product lines plastic-free. So already you could see just in that short space of time from Echo Plaza to the Thornton Budgens project, just how much change was possible. So things that we couldn't do in Amsterdam with new packaging materials, only a few months later we could now do. And the great news there is that Andrew Thornton can tick two very important boxes. So by reducing the plastic footprint, and this continues to be a project we work on together, we're now nearly 3,000 product lines there. He has ticked these two boxes, and one is no increase in food waste. And one of the big pushbacks in the from the plastic lobbyists is that plastic equals less food waste. And the reality is those two are not nearly as connected as you may think. So Andrew Thornton has reduced, particularly in the fresh produce aisles, a huge amount of plastic, and there is no increase in food waste. And the second box is his business is up 4% top line, bottom line. And if it's going to be good for business, then obviously the Tescos, the M&Ss, the Walmarts of the world, what they also need is to show to their shareholders that this is going to be not just good for people, not just good for the planet, but it's also going to be good for profit.
So let's go through in a rather systematic way the arguments that people make against going plastic free. Because intuitively, anybody who cares about the environment and has seen that the harm that plastic does must say getting rid of it is self-evidently a good thing. But there have to be arguments as to why people use it. So can you kind of catalog them one by one, and then let's hear the counter-argument, because the rapid adoption of your campaign is reliant in part on overcoming those arguments.
So the first thing we need to do is say this is no fault of plastic. This is a fault of man. Who knew a few decades ago man could invent a material that lasts forever? And what do we do with it? Do we put it on a pedestal, treat it like gold, value it? No. What we do is we treat it like rubbish. We throw it in the streets, we throw it in the ocean, we throw it in the bin. We use plastic in the wrong way. So that's the fundamental. It's a permanent material. And in many instances, it's a toxic permanent material that we use for impermanent purposes. So if you take packaging alone, plastic production worldwide, 40% of plastic production is used for packaging. Now, you and I, when we shop for anything, we're not buying the packaging. We're buying the thing inside. So why are we buying, and particularly when you're talking about perishable food and drink, why are we buying something that is wrapped in an indestructible material that will, unless burnt, live on the planet forever? So the fundamental for me is, if you look at that, if you step back and look at, we're using an incredible material that should be retained for things like, and valued for things like, I don't know, aviation, space travel, some uses of technology, some things in medical science. You know, it's a wonder material. But instead, what has happened is that we have used it as the default for absolutely everything. So we have now got ourselves into a situation, and we work with big guys like Unilever, who are the first to admit they have for 20 years made everything in plastic. So it's very difficult now to think of any other materials that can be used instead. And it is a wonder material. It's lightweight. It's flexible. It can be rigid. It can be stretchy. You know, there are so many things that we can use plastic for. But now we know that we are polluting the planet at this unprecedented rate. And we can come on to also what we strongly believe the impact on human health is. We know that we have to wean ourselves off it. And wherever there is change, there is also tremendous opportunity. So I hear the plastics industry, you know, the UK worldwide, lobbying governments to say, what about the loss of jobs? when really what we should be focused on is, what about the opportunity here? That particularly in the UK, where we have such a media noise around plastic, the opportunity to create new businesses using new biomaterials, materials that nature can handle, because clearly we know nature can't handle plastic, then there is a tremendous opportunity here. And it's been fantastic to see these new businesses bubbling up. And the materials that we're looking at are things like algae, using agricultural waste. So we're not talking about let's grow crops that should be used for food and make plastic out of them instead. That's not the answer. There is a huge amount of other materials that we can use. Mushrooms, going back to some of the old materials that we know there is an recycling infrastructure, and they can be infinitely recycled. Glass, metal, cartonboard, paper, wood, all of these materials. So the reasons that we are always given for it's too hard, one of them is always we get little simple things like the life cycle analysis. And often we'll be cited, if you take the paper bag and the plastic bag and you do a life cycle analysis and the carbon footprint of each of those, then apparently the plastics industry will say the plastic bag has a lower carbon footprint. But I'd really like to analyse that life cycle analysis, because I don't believe that we are taking it from the fact that from the minute you take a fossil fuel out of the ground, 99% of all plastic is made from fossil fuels. From the minute you take it out of the ground, the toxicity, the carbon that is created, the greenhouse gases that are created throughout its entire production life, including the one or two occasions it might be recycled, to the fact it never has an end of life. What kind of life cycle analysis are we actually comparing? Is this really like for like?
So what are the most interesting and promising materials that are emerging? You've mentioned algae, for example. Presumably, a little bit like solar and wind a decade ago, you had to make the case to say, we've got to get off coal. We have this alternative means of producing electricity and power. It's more expensive now, but with more widespread adoption, it will fall in price and then be cheaper. And we've now arrived at that moment. So presumably right now, the eco-friendly forms of packaging are still more expensive than plastic, but if we rapidly adopt them in a more widespread way and get economies of scale, we'll begin to see those prices converging. Where do you think what materials have the greatest promise and also economics that will cause consumers, but also grocery stores and other wholesalers or retailers to feel comfortable adopting them?
I think agricultural waste is going to be a really big winner. Already you can go to supermarket stores, you can buy a strawberry punnet and a tomato punnet that is made from the leaves and stalks of the fruit itself. So things like that's such a simple solution, isn't it? And when you're talking about true circularity, that couldn't be more perfect. So you're using something that is just going to be a waste product that's going to lie on the ground. And instead, you're making something useful out of it, and then its end of life is going to be going back to the ground. I love this whole thing of everybody talking about the circular economy. It's like we think man has invented this new thing called the circular economy. We've kind of forgotten. Nature's had one for billions of years. Everything went back to the soil, including ourselves. And then we broke that circular economy in the Industrial Revolution. And now we are trying to come back to it, realizing that the reality is there should be no such thing as waste. Humans are the only species on the planet that create waste. And what right do we have to do that, particularly in the massive volumes that we see across the planet right now?
What role do consumers have in this? I mean, in one level, consumers can say, I won't go to a supermarket that is stuffed with plastic, and can make the case and vote with their wallets and with their feet. But on another way, we can train consumers, as we increasingly are, to bring your own bags, think about shopping in bulk, a whole series of sort of consumer and behavioral choices which help accelerate the move away from plastic. And so on the one hand, your retailers have got some sets of obligations, but consumers do as well. How important a part of the solution is changing consumer practices and habits?
You're right. Every single person, everybody on the planet has a level of responsibility here. But I'd just like to mention that sometimes we put too much responsibility on the shopper, because it's a really simple matter to me. People buy what they are sold. It's the retailer and the brand's responsibility to sell them something different. It's that simple. So when I get retail bosses saying to me, oh, Sean, if we could just change the habits of the wasteful consumer, it floors me. Because since when did it become our problem? And it's very easy for brands. And there is the infamous story of the Keep America Beautiful campaign with the teary Native American Indian turning to the camera as somebody throws a can or whatever out of a car window, and the strapline comes up saying, Keep America Beautiful. And then you find out that was actually funded by Coca-Cola, because it was always the point of deflecting the responsibility of what happens to packaging, particularly for its next journey, deflecting that onto the shopper. When we have no infrastructure of note for recycling, particularly for plastic, there is no infrastructure. We recycle in the UK 9% of our plastic. In the US, 4.4% of plastic is recycled within the US. The rest of it is either landfilled, incinerated, or majorly exported. Over 60% of our plastic from the UK is exported, largely to developing countries. So don't even go there on the waste imperialism that we are demonstrating there.
So I fully understand and accept that there is a primary responsibility for the brands and then for the retailer. But give us some things that shoppers can nevertheless do to help accelerate the transition to a plastic-free aisle and planet.
We all have a really strong level of responsibility. So yes, don't buy any more plastic bottles of water. Why do those things even exist? Yeah, we will look back and think that was one of the marketing cons of the decade, if not, you know, the last 20 years. Somehow we didn't all dehydrate and shrivel up in the 70s without bottled water. So a plastic bottle of water really shouldn't exist on the planet anymore. And it's wonderful to see bit by bit, you know, here's San Francisco airport banning the sale of plastic bottles. Wonderful. So think to yourself, I'm going to have some kind of keep cup for my tea and coffee from now on. Just keep that with you. Don't buy plastic water bottles. Definitely never buy or use a plastic carrier bag again. And it's those simple things that will make a difference. And then champion those people that are really trying to give you a different choice. So the brands that aren't using plastic, really try and choose those, because we need to support these challenger brands that are doing the right thing right now. And it's very easy. We're all addicted to convenience just as much as we are addicted to plastic. But if you are offered the choice of get a brown paper bag, perhaps fill that up with your apples rather than the grab and go of the six pack of apples, then just take that little bit of extra time, because it does happen at every single level. You know, plastic for me is the gateway to so much else that we are waking up to what we are doing wrong. And it's all about hyperconsumption. Plastic really has enabled this massive ramp up in hyperconsumption. So we need to be mindful of what we are buying now. Let's try and buy a little less and buy better, and try and eradicate that word disposable from our entire vocabulary. Because the only things that we should really be consuming are food and drink.
So if you start with consumers' demand, the abolition of plastic packaging, a retailer sees that and responds to it and places pressure on the brands that they buy from to say, we will no longer stock you if you are too plastic heavy. It now comes back to the actual brands themselves. And in a world in which increasingly production and ownership is consolidated into fewer and fewer hands, you must have a tremendous opportunity to target 4 or 5 mega corporations. You mentioned Unilever, to get them to both adopt and change, and for that change to therefore happen fairly rapidly. So is that the strategy? And if so, who are those companies and how does one target them, and what are you doing in that regard?
So as an entrepreneur, you can imagine that I believe passionately in the power of business. And I think business can change the world. So working with some of these big organizations is a particular passion of mine. And one of the things that we do is we do what we call the plastic hackathon. So in November, for example, we went into Unilever and we worked with their whole home care division. And as ever, in these big organizations, this kind of these initiatives have to come from the top down. And so the head of home care at that time, you know, we co-created this fantastic hackathon, and we focused on one particular use of plastic, which is Unilever, and they are one of the more honest of all the big multinational FMCGs. They produce 46 billion plastic sachets every single year, majorly in developing markets. So we all know what's happening to those plastic sachets. They are uncollectible, let alone unrecyclable. So we focused on, can we come up with a solution and eradicate the need for those sachets? And of course, we're all, you know, anybody listening is probably thinking, well, why weren't they working on that anyway? And what I've learned is with these, the very big companies, you know, they can often work in slight silos, they'd be the first to admit. And everybody has the day job. And the day job often is not how do we eradicate 46 billion plastic sachets, it's how do we evolve and grow in these developing markets. That's their focus. So to have an entire day where we have a big kickoff and then we bring in a lot of experts and then we create teams, and it's a really great collaborative environment with people who've never been given that space within Unilever before to think about this particular problem. And by the end of that day, we had at least three solutions, none of which were brain surgery, to be honest, to eradicate 46 billion plastic sachets. And the great news is, not only did they put some money behind driving this initiative forward, but towards the end of this year, we will be running the first pilot in Indonesia. And if that works, imagine the leadership that will show. Because the plastic sachet is one of those invisible uses of plastic. Nobody really talked. We talked about the bag and the bottle. The trillions of plastic sachets that are thrown away every single day. And it's a complex plastic laminate, completely unrecyclable. Imagine if we could eradicate those globally by introducing a new material. So the other one that we did recently was WPP. So WPP, as you'll know, you know, massive global reach, 3,000 offices worldwide. And it's marvelous to me because I come from a kind of marketing and creative background to see the creative industries and the design industries, because we all know bad design got us into this problem. Good design will get us out of it. And they're all waking up to, hang on a minute, here we are, one of the biggest global media creative tech industries. And where are we in the solutions here? Because we have been majorly part of the problem, if we're all honest, making people want to buy more stuff. And we need to show leadership and help our clients now be part of the solution going forward. So only a couple of weeks ago, we did our first hackathon with WPP, which was cross agencies. And we are now working with the winning team. And the prize for that is that they will get an audience with Mark Reed, who's the global head of WPP, who is being very clear that he wants to take plastic out of WPP as a business. And they will get an audience with him, and we will hope that this will be a fully fledged business case that WPP will drive forward as a real initiative.
Let me understand that. WPP is a global advertising company and PR company. And you're saying when you take plastic out of WPP, they will no longer use images of plastic in their advertising or in their campaign?
Obviously, that would be my dream. Don't know if it's their dream. But no, they, at the advertising festival at Cannes, they put a press release out saying that they were going to significantly reduce all single-use plastic within their offices. So they're sorting out their own home. And then obviously through that, they are showing leadership for others. And I think that's a great place to start. So one of the things that we have launched at A Plastic Planet last year, we launched what we call the Plastic Free Trust Mark. And this is a trust mark that sits on the front of packaging. So we have over 100 brands and businesses that are applying for that, which is really to help the shopper choose. So people like Teapigs, Perkle Coffee, there are many products on supermarket shelves now that are starting to carry the plastic-free trust mark. We also launched something called the Industry Commitment Mark. And this is for people like WPP and The Conduit, are another organization that is adopting the Industry Commitment Mark. And this is a mark which it says working towards plastic free, because no business is ever going to be plastic free. Plastic is in so many different materials. You and I are probably sitting on a plastic chair. No, we're not. How amazing. I love that. That's why I love The Conduit. But you know, most of the time I'm sitting on a plastic chair. You know, plastic is, it's such a pervasive material everywhere. So no business is going to be plastic free. So by saying that we're adopting this commitment mark, working towards plastic free, there's a real transparency and an honesty in that, that we're on this path, which is the road to plastic ruin, but we want to get onto a new path. And how do we communicate that? And that's what the Industry Commitment Mark is about. So we've been working with Soho House Group, with the London Evening Standard, with The Conduit, and hopefully now with WPP and many other organisations globally to help them show leadership through example. And it starts with looking at what you're doing within your own office structure, within your own business. And then if you change, a little bit like you can see with Sky, and what Sky started with Sky Ocean Rescue. First, they did programming all about the problem of plastic in the ocean. Then they started to clean up their own business, and they've done an incredible job with that. And their next initiative, it's like the ripple effect, is they're now expecting their suppliers to also reduce their own plastic footprint.
So let me ask you a question, which is one part hope and one part dread. The hope part is, why do you think a campaign against plastic has accelerated so dramatically? If I hear what you've done in the time at which you've done it, it's really extraordinary. It's extraordinary the amount of attention you've generated and the change that you're helping to catalyze. And you're a small band of committed people, which is always gives me hope. And the dread part is, do you think we're changing fast enough, given the real urgency of the challenge that lies ahead?
I think the reason that plastic has generated so much media attention and public concern is that it's the one thing we can blame nobody else for. It's visible, it's tangible, it's recent, it's fixable. Whereas you look at the climate crisis, and I don't know, the climate crisis for most people, particularly me, it's overwhelming. What can I do? Whereas plastic, that is the one thing we can blame nobody else for. And we see it everywhere. We touch it every single day. So I think that's the reason that it has been something that has created so much change so fast, attracted so much media attention, that we feel that we are a little more empowered as people on the street to do something about plastic. And I love the fact that it really is the gateway to so much else, because as we were saying earlier, it is the gateway to hyperconsumption, which is, of course, one of the massive reasons for the climate crisis. So everything, as in nature, everything is absolutely connected. And then the second part of your question of, is change happening fast enough? Absolutely not. The rhetoric, the pacts, the pledges, the commitments that we see, everybody pushing it down to actually being somebody else's problem to inherit, 2030, 2050, you know, all of these things. What we want to do at A Plastic Planet is demonstrate that change can happen. It can be viable. It can be scalable. It can happen today. We do not need to continue to pump up plastic at this rate. Plastic production is on the up. Everything that we're thinking, you would imagine plastic production is actually maybe slightly tapering off. Demand is tapering off. Unfortunately, you couldn't be further from the truth. Bottle production alone up 7% last year. You know, we pat ourselves on the back in the UK saying, isn't it great? Look what we've done with the plastic bags. We're looking at the wrong number. 60 countries globally have banned the plastic bag. We still use 4.1 billion plastic bags in the UK alone. Why do we think we've got the right to still have the plastic bag in existence here? So things like that are frustrating, where we focus on the wrong numbers. We have a huge amount of talk about recycling. Yes, let's make everything recyclable. Recyclable is the weasel word of the decade for me. Because when people say, oh, I'm going to make my product 100% recyclable, are they going to recycle it? Where is this infrastructure? Where are these recycling fairies? 9% in the UK is recycled, 4.4% in the US. If we imagine we dramatically improve recycling infrastructure and we double that number to 18% to 9%, it's not enough. What is happening to the rest of this plastic? So that's where we come back to, we have to remember, if you produce it, you should be responsible for its second, third, fourth, fifth, forever life. That's real extended producer responsibility, because plastic will exist on our planet forever. Where do we think all this plastic is going to go?
So I like to end on a note of action, a how-to note. Is there a resource or a website or a set of materials that you can direct interested listeners to help them understand their role as consumers, their role as citizens, their role as activists in helping to join your campaign and accelerate the wildly important work that you're doing?
The first thing everybody should do is vote with their wallet. You know, if we demonstrate to brands that plastic-free brands sell better than plastic brands, it really is that simple, then they will change faster. So please vote with your wallet. From a more design perspective, because everything obviously happens at the design phase, we are launching later this year a big online resource library, so our plastic-free resource library, which I think will pretty much be the first in the world, because the question we get from everybody is, what else can I use? Because it has become this default miracle material for everything. So we wanted to create a library of materials that are, you know, far-reaching, so that you can read about the pros and the cons of every single material, because, of course, every material is a resource from the planet that there will be ramifications of. And who's going to tell you what, not just what the pros are, but what the cons are of every material that we may use instead of plastic? So we're launching that. And then I think the final thing is, just always remember, a plastic planet started 2.5 years ago with two unreasonable women that simply wanted the right of choice, soon joined by this army of incredible experts. And I have to say, in all my entrepreneurial careers, I have never worked with the caliber of people that I work with now. Our creative agency, Made Thought, our communications agency, Higginson Strategy, incredible people. And it really has showed me that as any individual, we think we're disempowered. We have no idea the power that we have. And I hope that that gives some people heart, you know, that vote with your wallet and know it, only 2 years ago, you were the nag if you said, oh, can I have tap water rather than a plastic bottle of water? You know, if you pointed out to somebody, maybe you should think about reuse rather than disposable. Now, if you are not an activist, you are part of the problem. And that's the message I'd love to leave with everybody. You have way more power than you think.
That's a wonderful note to end on. Congratulations on everything you've achieved in a remarkably short period of time. And we look forward to seeing you go from strength to strength and supporting you on that journey.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. Please also visit theconduit.com, where you can find more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers.